Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. To me, nothing says Christmas like the Office of Film and Literature Classification. And while we're out doing last-minute shopping and putting up our trees, Chief Censor Bill Hastings is still in his office watching hardcore pornography. I visited this week to see how his year's been. I understand that you are now the longest currently serving censor in the entire world.
Well, I don't know how official that is, but all the currently serving chief censors in the world seem to be of that view, Damien, yeah.
Does that include sort of police states and places like Libya? And
I don't know about Libya. It certainly includes Nigeria.
Yeah.
So it seems to have happened when Sweden, chief censors call each other by their countries, by the way, Gunnel Arbeck of Sweden, when she retired, I seem to have taken over the mantle. Yeah, so this is my 11th year.
11th year. Because normally there's an appointment, isn't there? You get, what, four-year terms?
Three-year terms, yep.
What happened to you?
Oh, I just keep getting reappointed. I was originally a National Party appointment under Jenny Shipley, I guess it was. Then I was reappointed three times by Labour. And now we're up for reappointment again.
It's just a job that no one else wants?
I have no idea, you know. Every now and then they advertise. I think they advertised last time, and I had to go before an interview panel. I mean, it's very disconcerting to see your job advertised in the paper. You want to say to someone, hey, I'm in this job already. I'm here. But went before a big interview panel, the whole shebang, you know, with Sir Geoffrey Palmer and Dame Margaret Baisley and Belinda Clark from Justice, and they interviewed me and thought I was still the best candidate. I don't know if other people applied, but I imagine they would have.
It would be increasingly self-fulfilling, wouldn't it, in terms of you turn up for the job interview and they say, so what experience have you had as chief since? You say, well, actually been doing it for 9 years.
I think that's a major problem, actually.
Pretty hard for anyone else to get in there.
And the Act says you have to be experienced in things like to come before the office and who's more experienced in that sort of thing than the incumbent. I think that is kind of an unfair advantage, which makes it more political. You know, I mean, it depends on what the politicians actually want, whether I'm in or out.
Still enjoy it?
Oh, you know, it's an infinite variety of stuff comes across your desk. Just when you think you've seen it all, something new will come. I mean, it's often horrible, but it's often really good, too. You know, it's amazing how creative, both positively creative and negatively creative, the human imagination is.
After 11 years, has it warped your fragile little mind?
Funny you should say fragile mind. I like to think it's not little. But when I first started, I didn't really have any idea, I think, of what's on the extremes, you know, what's on the edges. And that, of course, is where the freedom of expression and censorship becomes most important, is determining what the boundaries of acceptable depictions are. But I probably was a fragile mind at the start. But we do have psychologists here, yeah. And you sort of check in regularly, and they give you the tools that equip you to cope with the job. I mean, if you were reduced to a quivering mound of jelly every time a horrible picture came across your desk, you couldn't do the job. So you do have to toughen up a wee bit. But on the other hand, you can't get too tough. You can't get overly desensitized. And in some ways you get super sensitized in the sense that you can spot things coming a mile away. Right. You know, you can sometimes get a bit too trigger happy.
Do you find that when you go to the psychologist and they show you the ink blot pictures, you say, oh yeah, that's a man defecating on a woman?
No.
Said, no.
they don't show you those things, Damien. I don't know. I can tell you what they do for me. The first time I went, I had just seen a whole lot of really awful images of child molestation. You know, like if I lived to be 170 years, I couldn't have imagined what was in them. So you go there and they say, well, you know, you can't ignore the fact or pretend you haven't seen it. You know, these images are going to stay with you for your whole life. So you're just going to have to cope with them somehow. And they give you the coping mechanism. And my mechanism, and I mean, it seems to have served me well, is that I acknowledge that I've seen them, that they'll never be out of my brain. You know, they're always there. But they're encased in these watertight glass compartments, so they don't seep and ooze their noxious infections into the rest of my soul, you know? So they're there, but they're contained, and I can carry on with life.
Now, early on in your career as chief censor, I mean, I remember there was quite a bit of controversy, wasn't there? I mean, there were certain people rallying to have you kicked out of the office. You know, is that, how did that resolve itself? Because suddenly,
I don't know if it's actually resolved.
Well, 11 years on, you're still in the job.
Yeah, well, that's true. I seem to be the last person standing sometimes. But I don't know that it's resolved, actually. Certainly, this was another part of the fragility, you know. I had to develop a really thick skin. And that all started with Baisemois, that film Baisemois, a horrible film to have a big fight about. But anyway, and yeah, they were attacking my sexuality rather than the issues that censorship raises. And that took some getting used to. But what I used to do is write press releases with equal and opposite force correcting the press releases that those parties would issue. But I never issued them. I had a really good staff member who would help me write them. She'd come in here at 5:30 in the afternoon, and we'd finished writing them, and I would say, there, now let's send it. She said, no, how do you feel? And I said, I feel way better. She said, why don't you just put it in your desk drawer and sleep on it? And I have a desk drawer full of them that have never been sent, which I think is, it's got a good side and a bad side. The good side is that it's not a good look for the Crown, and we do represent the Crown here. It's not a good look for the Crown to have moved off the middle ground, and that's what they were trying to do, I think. They were trying to push us off the middle ground so that they could claim it and be heard as the voice of reasonable people, even though they're not necessarily that. So by not responding, we managed to retain the middle ground. The downside, though, is if you do an internet search, you know, if you Google Hastings and Chief Censor, you'll come up with the most skewed view of history, because, you know, those press releases in reply never got issued.
Are there any decisions that you made that you regret or would have made differently if you could make them again?
No, I don't think so, actually. I mean, we make the best calls we can at the time, you know. We've got really good systems here. When you look at the track record, actually, of appeals, you know, we issue between 2,000 and 2,500 decisions a year. Every year we probably get between, 5 to 10 of those 2,000 or 2,500 decisions appealed. I think about 90% of the time were upheld. The other 10% of the time were probably lowered. I don't think we've ever been raised. So in fact, we're either spot on or slightly more conservative than the review board wants us to be.
In the last decade since you've been doing this job, has there been a moral decline that you've noticed?
That's an opinion question, Damien.
Well, I suppose, you know, if you look back at the movies from the 1950s and 1960s and the things that were racy and were banned back then, and you now think how silly, do you think if we looked at what was banned in 1999, that there would be stuff that we would simply go these days we'd have no problem with?
For sure, the content, I mean, certainly the content of the 1950s, and we have cuts that show this. I mean, the censors back then were cutting for, you know, twin beds of a married couple slightly too close together, or camera angles, you know, with two people doing that satanic rock and roll dancing, where the cameras would sort of drift down to the pelvis. You know, all we have actual cuts that show they were cutting for that. And of course, that'd be silly to cut for that stuff right now. You know, in fact, we don't cut for anything like that now. We largely cut to reduce something that would be banned to an R18. So, you know, you're in sex territory, you're in violence territory, you're in sexual violence, which I don't even think was made in the 1950s. I don't think it's so much censorship. I think it's the freedom of expression and the breadth of things being expressed, or the breadth of ideas being expressed, is so much wider than it was back in the 1950s. So we're operating in places where people couldn't even conceive could exist back then.
So you don't think? Do you think in the last decade, as I said, there's been a shift in the standards at all?
Yes and no. How's that for a lawyer's answer? You know, certainly what we pass at R18 here goes back out there into society and becomes the new norm. Yeah. And we hear that when we get focus groups coming back in. You know, they say, oh, well, you know, why should we bother making something R16 or R18 when it's just going to be on TV in 7 weeks for my 5-year-old to watch? So you know, the in that sense we contribute to the if the shifting standards, if they are shifting. But against that, we've got quite good firm bedrock of law below which you can't go. So, you know, I mean, the law says we have to ban things that promote or support the exploitation of children for sexual purposes, or you know, a whole raft of things like that. That stuff will never be acceptable, never has been acceptable. So there is bedrock there below which we can't go. Above the bedrock, yeah, there's probably room to maneuver.
Just finally, Christmas without censorship would be
much, much worse Christmas than with censorship.
Do you have a big stack of Christmas porn somewhere around here?
No, the recession is kind of biting the porn industry this year. There's not as much as there was last year. So you have to recycle your DVDs, people.
Hits everyone in the strangest ways. Bill Hastings, thank you very much for your time.
That was Bill Hastings, New Zealand's chief censor. Coming up later on the show, we talk to an atheist on a bus and visit an Indonesian holiday hideaway.